from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and the callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now, here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
Welcome to the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show. My name is Alon, and sitting next to me is my gainfully employed game designer friend, Ara.
Hey, what's going on, Alon?
Co-host extraordinaire he is. And over there, we've got Andrew running the boards. Andrew, you think this week we're going to talk about Charles Goyette at all? No? Only, okay. So, see, for those of you who aren't here in the studio, he just talked to me. I don't know if that even went over the air. What do I know? Anyway, Ara and I, we are terribly sick.
Yeah, I like this background music thing.
Yeah,
this
no, it's good.
Cool.
We'll keep it going for the next minute or so.
Next 4 hours, you know.
I like it. Anyway, we're sick, and we've got water in front of us, and I've got, you know, a drippy nose. And
I've got two cups.
Dude, this morning, I was doing some push-ups because, you know, I want to look like you. I'm on a He-Man. And the blood rushes to my head because that's what happens when you do push-ups. And my bloody nose started, like, all over the carpet of my bedroom. It was great.
That's
like
fantastic.
Exploded because I... Anyway, goes to show I should not be doing any sort of push-ups.
Next up, World's Strongest Man competition, right?
We'll be lifting logs next week. All right, so last week we had Vladimir Kohl from Joystick in the studio. We had a great show, I think, but there were some things that I promised I'd talk about that I didn't. Most notably, and possibly actually the only thing I didn't get to, because I can't even remember what I said I was going to talk about, was the PS3 aftermarket and sort of what it implies about Sony and their direction. And so I have a little bit to say about that and possibly some theory about console success. Also, yesterday I was playing the new Tony Hawk with I mean, it came out a couple of months ago, but Project 8 on the 360 with my roommate John. And I noticed something, and I want to talk about that, just about how he plays games. So we'll address that. And also along the Tony Hawk theme, I got the new Game Developer magazine yesterday, I think. Well, not yesterday. It came this past week. We checked the mail yesterday.
How many copies did you get?
I got two. They send me extras.
Yeah.
Awesome. There have been so many co-hosts.
You know what? I think I actually get two at work.
Yeah. You personally get two?
Yeah, two with my name on it.
I just have so many co-hosts on the show, right, over time.
Yeah.
And Chatterbox is all, you know, my address. So I get all the copies. Anyway, so continuing with the Tony Hawk theme, the Game Developer Magazine had a postmortem on Tony Hawk for the Wii. And you've all, if you're listeners of the show, heard me talk about how crappy this game is. And what bothered me is
that... You know what's kind of misleading? Now, the listeners can't see this, but they have this big award next to Tony Hawk's Downhill Jam. And it's an article about these, you know, frontline awards they give out. But it makes it look like Downhill Jam is getting the frontline award.
And I hadn't even thought about that, but you're right.
I mean, the first time I saw it, I was like, wait a minute. Tony Hawk's Downhill Jam got an award?
No,
what is this all
about? I could give it an award, but it wouldn't be a good one. Anyway, there's some stuff to talk about based on this postmortem. And I'd like to talk about postmortems in general. I don't know if you've ever written one, Ara.
I haven't actually written one per se, but I've read several of them, and actually I have some opinions about them.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that.
Surprisingly enough.
Now, what did you want to talk about this show?
Well, let's see. I was you know, searching around on the internet trying to find some stuff, and I actually found like some funny court cases about video games. So I want to talk about
recent
a couple
ones
of those.
Or just historical.
I would say historical. Nothing. There's no real news on that front other than that.
Jack Thompson loser.
Well, and that it's some kind of Sony like, you know, vibration stuff or whatever.
Oh, but there was something. Apparently, this is what I'm trying to look up on Joystick. I read earlier today. I guess Time Magazine or not Time, like somebody's giving an Emmy to Sony for putting in motion sensing control into their controller.
I didn't know that Sony could receive Emmys.
Yeah, that's what I thought was weird too. I have to go back to the article on Joystick. Yeah.
Is Lara Croft going to get an Emmy soon too?
She might. Anyway, I read this on
maybe Mario.
I read it on my PDA and like I can't tell if it's a joke or not. I have to go find it on the real website and see if there it is. Yeah, they say really. Anyway, I'll read more about it during the break and come back to you guys because that'll be an amazing story. Apparently, there's a quote about how no other consoles have that right now, which is laughable, of course.
Okay, that's interesting.
Anyway, so there's that. And
so there's that. Now, I don't know if we'll get to all this, but, you know, a while ago, a listener asked us in an email, is it worth going to school first to get into the game industry? So,
and of course, we have some things to talk about because I did that myself, and I have lots of friends who did.
Yep, and I didn't, and yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I have friends in the industry who both went to school and did not go to school. And actually, there's probably more who didn't go to school. But anyway, that's not an argument not to go to school for gaming. They all at least went to school, and I'd like to think anyone who wants to have a real job will do that as well.
And I've also got you know, something that I've been curious about for a while, which is, you know, do game demos actually hurt the game industry, or not the game industry so much, but do they hurt sales?
I think we have actually helped. We have something to argue about here. I have a feeling we don't disagree on that. For those listening, by the way, Ara's talking all quiet because he's feeling kind of sick.
Yeah,
like I said earlier.
Yeah, I was assaulted by a mountain lion earlier today.
Yeah, so forgive us if our voices aren't in total control of the show. Anyway, we got a few minutes before the first break, and so I'm going to talk about what I noticed with my roommate when he was playing a game yesterday. So I've played Tony Hawk, and I never really, I mean, I did play the first one, the first Tony Hawk Pro Skater, but I didn't play the game for real until the second one, and I really put my heart into it in number three. Like, I played the second one on Dreamcast a little bit, a reasonable amount, but not enough to really get into it. The third one, you know, I played right through. I finished the whole thing. I was very happy with it. So one thing you realize if you play a Tony Hawk game is that you have to have full control over really all the buttons on the controller. And that becomes, I think, more apparent as the games progress in the series. But I was watching my friend John, and he does something very strange to me. He presses each button on the control pad with the tip of his thumb. So he only ever has control over a single button. And I've never really thought about this before, but there are certain games where he doesn't excel at, and then other games he does really well at. First-person shooters, he does generally very well. And you'll remember that first-person shooters, at least these days on consoles anyway, you're using both thumbsticks, right? And the L and R buttons are your main inputs, right? Because you're just firing. And so it makes total sense that he would do well in this type of game. But then I introduced him to Tony Hawk. Now, he is coming into, like, the eighth game in the series, and so when he's playing the demo and playing the game after he bought it,
he's never played that type of game before?
Well, he's never played Tony Hawk, and I would claim it's got a fairly unique control system.
Yeah. Except for the games that copied it, but, yeah.
Yeah, well, point taken. So, anyway, he's playing this game, and he's really, like, he's having a hard time getting through the training, and I can sort of understand that, because it shoves you through kind of fast, at least considering if you played the first game, it would be a lot more slow. But I looked at his hand while he was playing this because he wasn't getting some of the combos that he had to get. And I thought, wow, you're pressing the A button with the tip of your thumb. Like, that's going to make it really hard for you to do all the things you need to do. You know, you have to be able to go from grinding to flip tricks to grabbing the board and jumping and all that. Like, you got to do it. You got to be able to release the jump button and immediately go into a flip trick.
You know what's really funny about this is that coincidentally, the one of the, I think, founders, if I'm not mistaken, of Neversoft actually wrote an article about something that's related to what you're talking about in this very magazine, Game Developer, a few months ago. He talked about different habits of how people press the controller and how people, so some people kind of mash, you know, their thumb kind of just all over the place.
All the buttons.
And there's other people who, you know, are very precise, just like you're describing John is.
Well, the thing is, I like to think that I'm precise now in a Tony Hawk game, and trying to do tricks in the air, sometimes you find, or at least I find myself, just jamming on a lot of buttons. But in general, like, I'm pretty conscious of what I'm doing. It's not that my thumb covers everything and I bash all of the buttons. It's that they cover everything and I know exactly what I'm pressing.
Right.
And I can go from pressing the X button to the B button to the Y and the A on a Xbox controller anyway.
Right. Well, certainly, you know, like, I guess on Xbox, it would be like between X and A. You know, one thing that I like to do, which is, I think, what you're talking about, partially
exactly.
At least, is, you know, you put your thumb over the whole button, right? So the tip of it presses X, and basically,
and the knuckle.
The joint
he was so
is pressing A, so you can kind of modulate between them real quick.
That's what I told him. I said, because in Tony Hawk, you hold the A button down, like, all the time, basically, because
right.
You're trying to get speed, and then you release it to jump,
right?
To do an ollie, right? Or you do a boneless, a big ollie, and then you have to immediately go into button presses. And I told him, I said, you're going to do a lot better if you press the button with your knuckle so that you can access the X button with the tip of your finger and not have to move your thumb.
Mm-hmm.
And this was very surprising to him. And I thought about this and I said to myself, anyway, this actually proves the importance of Mario. Not so much on the Nintendo controller, because the buttons were horizontal.
That's probably where most of us learned that, actually.
Yeah, but on Super Nintendo especially, yeah. I mean, it's because the Super Nintendo button layout was more similar to these.
Right. No, but even on the first one, because you had to do that to run and jump,
yeah,
basically.
You still had to, and you were constantly holding B and then pressing A, which right. in the case of Xbox would be holding X and then pressing A. And I realize, like, people now who don't grow up with Mario or the Super Mario Brothers games, maybe they don't catch on to that. Now John's older, and he didn't play, like, complex console games until he was further on in life. Like, I started at, you know, 7, right?
Yeah.
And he's a good 11 years older than me or something. So he's had a little bit more, he had more time to not develop these skills, if you want to call them that. But I realized just how important Mario was to really all action gaming these days. You've got to have a good control over this. Now, I'm sure this applies to lots of other games, but for me, it was Mario.
That's a pretty astute observation.
I came to appreciate it, put it that way.
Yeah.
But I'm curious, and I don't think we're going to get any calls on this, but if you do want to call, 866-536-1100, I'm curious if you've seen other people have issues with control schemes. Now, I'm not talking about people with one arm and stuff. Obviously, they're going to have some
right.
issues.
Have to have all your fingers and
limbs. Yeah, completely apt people having issues with control schemes in games. I'd like to hear your stories about it. We'll be right back after the break, everyone.
Welcome back to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name's Ara.
I'm Alon. I thought you were leaving an opening for me.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, I was going to actually start talking, but then, you know, the Brillo pad in my throat just decided to act up again, so.
We're sick here, folks, on the Chatterbox Video Game Radio, but not sick enough. Not too sick to mention UAT.edu, the University of Advancing Technology, where you can go to school and learn about making games, which is one of the topics Ara was considering talking about today.
That's right.
Now, before we get into your stuff here, I just want to mention I'm still looking for the real article related to the PS3 controller and winning an Emmy. Apparently it won an award, but I'm not confident based on Joystick's source that they mentioned.
I'm skeptical
said was actually true
about this award, because this was for innovation, right?
Well, I don't think the word innovation.
Not right. innovation, just what, technical
probably just
achievement?
For excellence.
Excellence?
Yeah,
okay.
Let me...
Even more vague.
Yeah, it just has received it. I don't know. I'm still looking. The Technology and Engineering Emmy Award came as the console manufacturer also revealed it, you know, sent a million units to retail.
I'm curious. I'm just kind of mystified by this, because it's like, what's so impressive about that technology? I mean, it's been used in other games before. I mean,
well,
I went
to emmyonline.org or .com or whatever. I'm trying to find out something about this, but I'm not finding the information I need. So I'm going to hold off, because so far what I've seen, the Joystick article looks misleading. I don't usually think they write things that are incorrect, but they're sourcing stuff that I'm not able to find elsewhere. So I'm going to hold off on comment for now. But anyway, you had all these things you want to talk about, and I know I got a million things, so let's jump into it.
All right. So, you know what? Let's talk about video game demos and sales.
Okay, do you want me to give examples first, or you go into your thing?
Well, let me do my little spiel here, and then we can see if we disagree with each other.
All right, let's
not.
Hear it.
So, one thing that I noticed, and this is what got me kind of thinking about this topic, is that, you know, on Xbox 360, you can download, you know, games for all the live arcade games. And, you know,
yeah,
as well as
other
real games.
Real games.
Right. So, not that the arcade games aren't real, indeed, but...
Understood.
You know, some of these demos, like for Luminous, for example, they let you play for a really, really long time. I was playing Luminous for like 10 minutes at least. I'm being conservative there.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying.
And, you know, I was showing this other game, this real game demo, the non-arcade game demo of MotoGP 06 to a friend that came over. And that game, you know, you can race a whole race, you know, just... I mean, it's just like a quick race, right? You don't get any other features, but you can go through a whole race, you know.
You don't
just
get
like
any
that.
Play modes, no career mode, no
right.
extra bikes.
But you can, you know, you can play the game. And, you know, that's probably what you'd expect by a demo, right? But, you know, there's two reasons, I think. The first one being pretty obvious, and the second one being really, you know, not so trivial. about why I think that, you know, game demos actually hurt game sales. And the first one is that, you know, when you play the demo, you could realize, wow, you know what? This is, like, not quite as good as I thought it would be. I'm not going to get this game anymore. I don't know how many times this has happened to you, but to me, there are so many more games that I was looking forward to that I played demos of and decided not to get the game as opposed to vice versa.
I really think it depends on your character. And I I have a feeling that the benefit in terms of sales outweighs. And here's my reasoning. I actually have a lot of them. First of all, like the people who are so selective and stingy, kind of like you and I.
Yeah. I'm pretty selective.
Yeah. When it comes to what games we buy, we're probably not going to spend our money on games that we're not sure about anyway. And playing the demo gives us a chance to try out all these games. And on the off chance that one surprises us, we might actually get it. But chances are we weren't going to buy that iffy game anyway. So I wouldn't be too concerned about that person, at least from a sales point of view. Assuming I would be interested in sales, right? And I certainly don't care. So that's one side of it. But on top of that, at least with the Xbox, there's so much more than what a demo shows. Like, there are some demos that let you play online. The newer version of the Lost Planet demo is an example of this. But Xbox Live is a huge component of Xbox gaming. Now, I know that a lot of people who have Xbox 360 don't even have Xbox Live. But I was realizing that my roommate, John, and I bring him up a lot, right? Because he's like, he's older, but he's a real gamer. He loves this stuff. And I see him interact with other people on Live a lot. And it impresses me because I realized, for instance, this week, we're going to get two free maps for Gears of War. I don't know if you were aware of this. But I thought, that's funny. One of the most popular games, people would certainly pay for these maps, yet we're getting them for free. Same with Halo 2. But the beauty of giving stuff away for free, whether it be a demo or free maps or something, is that it gets you to want to play the game, and then since you have the game, you want to have your friend play the game so that you can both play online together. And a demo sort of introduces you to the game in a way that makes you want to get it so that you can do the things not in the game. For instance, Xbox Live. This isn't necessarily true, as true at least, on a system like the Wii. If they were allowing you to play demos, there's not as much online gaming there, and I don't think it would be as effective. But because of Xbox Live, I think that's a huge component for why they can give away these demos, and it makes sense.
Well, here's another reason why I think that it can hurt game sales, is because a lot of times, too, and I've noticed this more in the past when, like, those jam packs started coming out for regular PlayStation.
Oh, those things were horrid.
Is that the demo actually can be completely misrepresentative of what the game's actually all about.
Which game was like that?
You know, I can't give you any specific examples, but I played a lot of demos where, for example, right, they don't give you the first level demo. They'll give you, like, the third level.
Oh, they never do. They always slap you right in the middle of the game. And that's when you have all the stuff, all the weapons.
Yeah, and there, I mean, it's not really an appropriate thing to subject the player to, right? I mean, admittedly, okay, you know, the first level usually is probably going to be a little too slow-paced for somebody. But, you know, if, let's say you play some kind of demo for, I don't know, your Gears of War or whatever, and it's totally kicking your butt, right? And the demo is way too hard. You're going to say, okay, you know what? The game is about this kind of difficulty. This game's too hard. You know, maybe I'm not going to buy this anymore. It's a lot harder than I thought it would.
I'm pretty confident that the people who produce those demos put a lot of thought into what part of the game they want to provide. And I'm sure they choose the most fun part.
You'd be surprised. But ideally it should be deliberate, but a lot of times I don't think it ends up being as deliberate as it should.
Back in the day, the jam packs you're referring to, though, it was kind of early on in the days of demos. For games, like, because with cartridges you were never getting free demos, but on CDs they could start distributing those easily because of the cost, and so that was kind of early on. These days, especially with the digital, you know, distribution of these demos, they're a lot more adept, I think, at producing high quality demos. And like Tony Hawk, I was playing that, and it's not the very beginning of the level, but it's in a very exciting part in the skate park. And it's very representative of the game, in my opinion. It lets you do everything you need to do to feel like you're doing the skateboarding.
Well, it's probably a good demo then. But
great demo.
Here's my third and most impressive reason why these game demos maybe not so good for at least game sales, is because, you know, if you can play a game like Luminous for 10 minutes without even buying it, something like, you know, MotoGP 6, you play a whole lap of a real race, and you don't have to buy it.
Geometry Wars is a good example of this.
Geometry Wars 2. I mean, you can, if you're a cheapo gamer, right? I mean, you may question why you might have a 360 in the first place, but if you are, it's like you can get to play all these games and have all this enjoyment. Now, they're very narrow feature-wise, right? You don't have to pay anything.
But you're describing the cheapo gamer. And the thing is, the money is made off the people who aren't the cheapo gamers.
Actually, I disagree, but we can deal with that when we come back.
The cheapo gamer, people don't make money off of. It's proven. You have to have a certain attach rate to actually
make money. No, I've got words for you, young man.
If you don't buy four or five games, the people lost money. That's what I hear. We'll be back after the break, everybody. Call us at 866-536-1100.
It's me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's a number one. Woohoo!
Welcome back to the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show. My name's Alon, and next to me is, as I said before, our game designer co-host.
I'm Aura.
That's Aura with his scratchy voice today. Again, I got to apologize. We're both kind of sick, and so if we talk slow, it's probably because we're trying very much not to cough into the mic.
We're trying to keep all our marbles in our mouths.
I'm convinced that I'm going to sneeze right onto this microphone at least three more times.
That would be an awesome sound. The show.
Luckily, I've been able to keep it away from on air. So we were talking about game demos, and I was trying to argue that cheapos are not the ones that the game companies make money off of.
No, they don't. But here's what happens. I think that there's a huge contingent of people who buy games, especially like the big blockbuster games, like, you know, Grand Theft Auto and like Gran Turismo, that, you know, they never end up playing most of the game. They buy it because a whole bunch of people are buying it and it's real popular and it's just that mainstream. And they buy it and they'll play like, you know, a couple tracks, or they'll run around and beat up a few people and that's it.
Yeah, but I've never seen a game where the demo is really enough to make you not buy the game completely.
Well, there's no
wanted to buy it.
Right. Well, the thing is, I mean, there's no way for you to really tell now, so you can't really establish whether there is.
Well,
or
no,
isn't.
Like Geometry Wars is a great example. Like, I want to get that game, but I have general principle against buying digitally distributed content.
Right.
Well, I don't like that idea.
Right. Well, my point here is that, you know, people, especially the mainstream gamers, are going to be less inclined to buy as many games because there's just already a wealth of, you know, albeit feature poor, but already a wealth of gameplay that's like at their fingertips.
Let's see where.
At no cost whatsoever.
I see it as you've got this gamer. Let's say I'm a guy who buys, and I'm not, but let's say I'm a guy who buys only first person shooters and football games, you know, Madden and Halos. And I have a feeling there's a strong number of people who buy just those two categories of games, basically, or the odd whatever the hot game is, like Grand Theft Auto or something.
Right.
He's not going to buy other games, no matter what. Of course, there's exceptions to that rule, but they're not going to buy anything but those games. And those games, they're going to continue to buy every Madden, and they're going to continue to buy all the big first-person shooters. So whether or not there's a demo for it, I don't think it's going to discourage them.
If they care about those games specifically, yes. I'm talking about is just in general.
Here's the thing, though.
Of person who just wants to play a game and doesn't care about, you know, getting the whole feature package of GT4, they just like, you know, they just want to race every once in a while.
But there's a lot
of those people.
There's the games that you're devoted to. Those are the games that a demo is definitely not good enough. And then there's the other genres that you don't care about. But by playing these demos, you get introduced to a game you normally wouldn't play. And so there's a much higher chance of you actually wanting to buy it if you played it a little bit and enjoyed it. And if you don't buy it, nothing lost in terms of the publisher's point of view. Right? Because you weren't going to buy it anyway.
Well, right. But
so I think it exposes you to a lot more things and increases the chances that you might actually try something you didn't try before. I would have to see, like, it'd be very difficult to measure that.
I'm surprised how much gameplay they're getting out of these demos.
That's one thing I'm very happy about. As a radio host, I need to be able to play all the games.
No, this is awesome. I mean, I'm very happy about it, too. It's definitely, you know, straight up good for all consumers.
Yeah, because I can come on the radio and give a fully fledged opinion based on one level of a game. It's great. I can tell you how much I think this game is good or bad, even after I haven't played it.
But, you know, I mean, you know, like my dad, right? He bought Gran Turismo 3 just because, you know, he wanted to have this racing game to play.
And then he realized he didn't like it?
Well, no, he just doesn't play video games, you know? I mean, you know, he likes to race cars, you know, just as like a hobbyist, you know, every once in a while on his spare time, and he's really into racing. So he bought this racing video game just to try it out. And, you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, he'll play a little bit of it, and then he just gets tired of it, and he doesn't do it.
That's fine. But I mean,
he's never played more than, like, one race in a session, and he's never played more than, like, I don't know, one session every few weeks.
Yeah, but I also don't see him downloading a bunch of demos and thinking, ha-ha.
Well, the thing is that if he happened to have, and maybe there's other type of people who maybe aren't even smart enough to download the demo, but in the happenstance that they are, you know, I think that he would be highly dissuaded from actually buying and putting money into this thing.
I think the situation where demos hurt is a situation like you and me, where we feel the need to get access to lots of games, but now we don't have to buy them because we just can play them a little bit and get a feel for what the game's about.
Well, see,
but that's pretty rare.
Yeah, well, I don't think that works for people like us, though, because at least to me, you know, playing just one track over and over is not satisfying. It's the long-term experience of the game that's satisfying to me, whereas I think the more mainstream gamers, they don't really care as much about the long-term experience. They're just like, oh, you know, I want to race a motorcycle now, or oh, I just want to feel like racing some other car. I want to, you know, go beat up pedestrians or whatever.
Yeah, we're just going to have to agree to disagree on this one.
Perhaps.
I really think it's valuable to put out the demo there, and I hadn't, before talking to you about this, hadn't put a huge amount of thought into it. I was just happy that I had access to them. There are some times where Luminez, you're right, Luminez gives you a whole lot of gameplay. And they should, since they screwed you by having to buy like two or three packs to get the whole game. But, you know, and Geometry Wars, I can just play the demo a good 4 minutes. I don't even last that 4 minutes. Of course, I think they made the demo intentionally super incredibly difficult right at that 4 minute mark.
Yeah, I think it ramps up like crazy.
Yeah, just for the demo. But I still want to buy the game, and my problem is that...
But have
digital,
you?
I will be buying it on Xbox Live Arcade Unplugged because I can get it on disc now.
There you go.
But I refuse to buy it digitally distributed. Anyway, that's another conversation.
Because that's just your thing.
I refuse. Anyway, so I said, I've promised for 2 weeks now that I wanted to talk about PlayStation 3 and its lack of sales. And this is sort of linked to what I was reading before about the Technology Award. Regardless of whether or not they won the award, part of the quote in the article at gamesindustry.biz is saying, the overwhelming consumer demand and critical acclaim for PS3 is testament of the platform's strength and the industry's desire for a true next-generation system. And it says, you know, it goes on to say that, you know, whatever, this announcement, this Emmy came right as they announced that they sold a million or shipped a million to retailers.
Where are they?
Yeah, at the retailers.
I mean, what are they, like, building extra walls and annexes to their stores out of PS3s?
Oh, my God. It's ridiculous. All these stores have so many of them, and it's just two months later. And it's not that they have some overwhelming stock where they have 300 at each Best Buy, right? It's just that they have any is absurd if you consider the history of console releases. Even if you can...
Are you saying I can go out and buy one right now?
I'm saying you could go out and buy one probably at many different locations right now. Those people are dying to sell them because it's just...
And I don't have to buy like a 30-game bundle or whatever?
No, not at all. And I mean, how many times has this happened in the last 10 console releases?
I mean, I don't know. Is Neo Geo included in that one?
I mean, think back to PlayStation. PlayStation couldn't really buy after the first day. Same with Nintendo 64, same with Dreamcast, same with PlayStation 2, same with Xbox, same with GameCube, same with the Wii, same with the Xbox 360. All these systems, if you didn't, you know, hurry your butt out to the stores immediately or get a reserve on it, you weren't getting that system. And it's become more so with the eBaying that happened on the 360 and the PlayStation 2.
Yeah.
People know that it's a moneymaker. Before, it was just who wanted the system, right? And if you were smart enough to go to Walmart at midnight.
Right.
But, that happened for the PlayStation 3 because they wanted to flip it, and then all these people end up returning it to the stores because they can't sell it. And I actually have a friend who's stuck in that situation where he couldn't sell the thing, and then he's got someone at work who's like, oh, well, I'm convinced I can flip it for more money. And he, like, you know, he's not a jackass. He flat out said, listen, you can buy it in stores right now. I was not able to flip this thing and make money off it. If you want to buy it from me so I don't have to return it to the store like a chump, fine. I won't argue with you. But I just want to make sure you're an educated consumer.
And, well, that's very noble of him.
By the end of the conversation, she was still almost convinced that she would buy from him. And of course, she won't. But I don't think we've gotten the official word on it yet. But the point is, all these all these supposed sales and run for the system that we were all expecting didn't happen because of the overpriced.
Well, it's too much. It's just, it's crazy.
Well, it's not just that it's too much. It's that it's too much and there's nothing to play on it. Like, Sudoku downloaded on the PS3 might be the most tempting release on that system right now. I mean, there's actually, I like Blast Factor a little bit too, which is like Geometry Wars. But, you know, Resistance was great. I like Resistance. Well, great is kind of pushing it. Like, it's a mediocre game that somehow keeps you playing, and I think it's because of all the guns. I played through it, like, twice, once on single player and once cooperative, so it certainly got a draw there, but I can't claim that it's anything special. But, really, the only draw of the system right now is if you want a Blu-ray player, and this is what I was saying before it ever came out, that I think that's their main focus, is that they probably plan on dropping the price later when Blu-ray is cheaper, but right now, the only people who would see this as a value is someone who really wants a Blu-ray player, and if you're that person, you know, you deserve to get what you get.
Well, how else do you get one right now?
Well, there aren't really many options. You can get computers with disk drives in them to play it, but
less than $600.
That's about it. No, not than like a $2,000 PC, laptop anyway. But it's just fascinating to me that people can't sell them. People on Craigslist can't sell them. People on eBay can't sell them, and then they end up in the stores. And what I was saying before about the sort of we might see a trend now in game consoles, or the breaking of a trend, where if you think back after Atari left the scene, right, and there was the big video game drought, there was the Nintendo and the Super Nintendo. They dominated, at least in the United States and Japan, they dominated for two consoles. And then came PlayStation. Nintendo 64 wasn't as popular. PlayStation and PlayStation 2 dominated. And it looks like the two console success, it might be shifting into Microsoft territory for the Xbox 360, because I mean, clearly Nintendo's got a success. Everyone wants the Wii, and it's hard to get, and same with the DS Lite and all that. They always do well, but they're not necessarily first in the eyes of the analyst. The PlayStation 3, though, like, who knows a year from now what's going to happen? But essentially, if the Xbox 360 can keep having stuff that people want to play, and they have an incredible Xbox 360, Xbox Live environment, which really, by the way, just drives more sales. The fact that I want Xbox Live really sells two or three, because it gets my friends to buy it as well.
You gotta have people to play.
It's ridiculous. I never considered this before, but it sells systems like nobody's business, because all my friends want to buy it now. I mean, theoretically, me. My friend John, like, his brother went and bought a system for his friend just so he could play with John and his brother. Anyway, PS3 doesn't have that. Nobody's buying it, and I think it's time to transition. I'm curious what you all think about that. We'll be back after this break.
Welcome back to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Yeah, my name's Ara.
I'm Alon.
And we have Andrew back there.
with the sound effects.
Apparently coughing even more than we are.
Yeah, before we get to a caller that's on the line, I got to remind everybody, uat.edu, place to go. You want to learn about games? I went there. Ara didn't. That's all right. Plenty of other people did as well. And, you can learn how to make games there. All right, so we got someone on the phone here, one of our listeners who's actually, I guess, live in the chat. If you go to chatterboxgameshow.com, you can get live in the chat as well. You can also listen to us, by the way, on All Games Radio at allgames.com, and they have a huge live chat, like way more people involved in that because they got so many different shows. They got listeners from all the different shows talking in there. But anyway, chatterboxgameshow.com, we've got our own live chat you can join in. But let's bring on it. What's the name here, Andrew? I've got pseudonyms. I've got real names, fake names. Who is this guy?
Angel.
Angel. Angel, you're on with Chatterbox.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about how a lot of people originally were worried about Microsoft basically using the Xbox brand to get inside the home so that they could sell other stuff. And I see it happening with the HD content and the newly announced IPTV.
Isn't it great?
Is it what?
Isn't it great?
I mean, I actually think it's kind of cool. But I don't understand why people were angry, and then I don't hear anybody complaining about it.
I don't really recall anyone being angry about them selling stuff. I think I might have been a little bit bothered by the idea of them selling T-shirts and just swag over Xbox Live.
What's this What's the story? Like, I'm kind of confused. What's there to get mad over or whatever? What did people get angry about?
We were mad about microtransactions.
Right.
Like Xbox Live opening that up, and we hate that.
Well, we hate that, yes.
But selling like t-shirts and trinkets wouldn't really piss me off too much. It would bother me a little bit.
Well, it'd just be like almost like, oh, they're selling it off a website, but they're doing it through the 360.
It would be attack of the merch. The merchandising would bother me a little bit, but not a lot. It's the microtransactions and in-game things, game-related content, that would bother me. So that's why I think there might have been a miscommunication there, Angel. That might be why you're not hearing anybody complain about it. Now, the high-definition content, which apparently has been very, very successful lately and is now leading into the IPTV stuff, so you're going to be able to watch live and recorded TV on your 360, it's beautiful. I hope I don't have to pay, like, a service charge for that, but I guess Vongo just announced that their stuff is going to be compatible to stream to the 360 as well. And anyway.
It's all very confusing to me.
As long as it's media-related, I think it's great. They're actually, I just for the first time connected my my laptop's music selection to the Xbox 360 in the house. I was like, wow, that was incredibly easy. I think it's weird that they require I have Zune software on my laptop.
Yeah, I don't know. My computer runs on potatoes.
Yeah.
So.
They're trying to make Zune brand like the Microsoft Music brand instead of just a piece of software to run their hardware music player. But anyway, so now I have Zune software and I don't plan on getting a Zune. Angel, was that the only thing you called in to say was to talk about the transactions of HD content?
Well, no, it's just that, like, everyone made it seem as if Microsoft had this evil scheme where as soon as we get in the home, we're going to do something really bad, and all I've seen is great content.
Well, they don't do the bad stuff yet. They lull you into a false sense of security.
Yeah.
And, I mean,
and then the bombs go off.
What bad stuff could they do? Well, that's the thing. I think
Bill Gates can, you know, look into your living room and see what you're doing.
Ara and I...
He already can do that.
Ara and I don't remember people being upset about the thought of that. It's the thought of game content that I feel should be built into the game, then being sold later, which bothers me. And there are already some examples of that. But selling other things over Xbox Live, whatever. I mean, if there's a desire out there, then cool. And I think the HD movies and stuff, I think it's great. I don't plan on ever buying one, but I think it's great that it's there. And it's sort of a you need that. Like, we need that large-scale media player to get that sort of content delivery to exist. Like, everybody was talking about it, and I guess Amazon tried it, and a lot of places have tried to do this. Vongo's an example, right? Tried, but not terribly successful. But if you get the Xbox 360 to have its own sort of closed-source system to deliver this content, then it can be successful, and it's proven to be so. Although there were some kinks in the system when it first came out, it's proven that apparently people want it, I guess. I mean, at least according to the articles I've been reading. I don't know who the hell would want to wait 24 hours, decide they get the movie, and then have to leave their thing on, downloading 6 gigs of movie onto a hard drive that you only have 12 gigs free on anyway. Like, that's crazy to me, but whatever. People are doing it, so yay to them. And actually, is an HD movie only 6 gigs? You would think it'd be a lot more.
I don't know. I couldn't tell you on that one.
The 360 hard drive only has 12 gigs free. 8 gigs of the 20 are devoted to Xbox, the original Xbox backwards compatibility. So
is that true?
Yeah.
That's wow. That's pretty lame.
Yeah. If you look at your Xbox 360 when there's nothing on it, you get 12 or 13 gigabytes of data free, and the rest of it's all just sort of taken for Xbox backwards compatibility. Yeah, they're gonna need to release a bigger hard drive soon.
Well, didn't you see the leaked pictures of the new 360?
With the HDMI port
and the 120 gigabyte hard drive.
Yeah, I mean, they've been talking about a bigger hard drive. People have been rumoring a bigger hard drive since day one, but they still haven't actually officially announced it, which I think is dumb. Why not? Well, maybe it's not so dumb because people will continue buying the system. But it's obvious it'll come out soon enough. I mean, my roommate, he doesn't download HD content. We've only got 1 gig left on that thing because of just various demos that we have to clear off the machine.
Really?
Yeah.
I was struggling to fill it up, but I guess it's Because of my internet connection speed or something.
When you gotta watch videos and you gotta download the new Tony Hawk game.
Yeah, I don't care about those videos online. I'm like looking through all the things. I'm like, okay, like TV show commercials. I'm like, what is this? I want some video games here.
Dude, it's a media center.
Indeed, it is.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Angel. We appreciate it. He brings up a good point. Like it's becoming a media center, and I didn't think they would be successful at it, which is my point. Like Sony has talked about wanting to do that.
Right.
And Microsoft has talked about wanting to do it, but I didn't think Microsoft would pull it off.
Well, this is a pretty straightforward way of delivering it, so I think that that's really the key, you know?
Yeah. It's funny because their whole big push about claiming the HD era is here and all that, it seems they've been fairly successful. And Sony, as sort of backlash, saying, no, you don't even have true HD, when in fact half the time they don't even have true HD, is fascinating material to me. It's just
anything that's a dig at Sony is fascinating to you, isn't it?
What? No, it's Sony has earned it. I like Sony. I love the PlayStation and the PlayStation 2, but with this PlayStation 3 fiasco, they earned all the heartache I give them, because when they claim their system is great 1080p and more than half the games don't do 1080p, and the games that don't do 1080p, like on your TV, if it can't do 720, it's got to be 480. It's just, there's a million prods. So many ways they screwed up. It's unbelievable. Have I ever even mentioned this? Every time I play Resistance, which is the only game we have,
right?
I play Resistance, at least once a game, the controller goes haywire.
No, you didn't.
And I read this on Joystick, too. Before I ever played the PlayStation 3, I read about it, how it, like, it just goes nuts.
What do you mean it goes nuts? Like, it just, like,
okay,
it's like a Mexican jumping bean or something?
It's as if someone pushed the analog pad all the way over to some direction, and you just start spinning around.
Wow.
Yeah, and that, or yesterday, I faced upwards and spun around, so everything was twisting. And that happened twice to me.
It's a game bug or something?
I don't know if it's related to the game
or the hardware, something hardware going crazy.
I would assume it's the hardware.
Interference, maybe.
Well, I don't know. I would assume it's the hardware, but I haven't been proven right or wrong. But that's like one huge fault with that. Imagine if they ever do tournaments online and stuff. Wow.
Well, no more tournaments.
I'd be pissed off. I'd be plugging that controller in. That's for damn sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're at the end of our show. We don't have any more time. So come back next week, everybody. Hope you enjoy the podcast. Don't forget to go to chatterboxgameshow.com. And I usually forget to mention, but go to allgames.com, like I said earlier in the show, and you can hear our show all week long. We'll be back next week, everybody.
See you later, guys.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.